even when they were portraying them as the violent criminals that deserved to be sent to a prison in the country that was not their own, potentially indefinitely, they actually knew that the vast majority did not have convictions in the U.S. And we found that, you know, from those six, you know, half a dozen of them had convictions for what would be deemed violent crimes.
You also write that the State Department said it's not responsible for the conditions of the place where the U.S. sent the men to. You had Bukele saying the U.S. is in charge. And, of course, you had President Trump saying that Bukele was in charge. Parallel, your final comment.
You know, I think this is part of the issue that experts, advocates, lawyers point out to. When you push a border enforcement detention out, who is responsible at the end for what happens to the in this case, these men who were detained? I think everyone, by the U.S. pushing to El Salvador, it says whatever happens in El Salvador is not our issue. El Salvador is saying, well, you know, it's still under the jurisdiction of the U.S. So at the end, who is accountable for any human rights violations that the men allege occur while they were in detention for months?
Perla Treviso, we're going to link to the ProPublica Texas Tribune report at democracynow.org. We're going to also do an interview with you in Spanish posted online. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Amplify PDX, presenting their community block party on August 9th at Open Signal. The event will include tabling, live music, performances, and workshops. Tickets and information at opensignalpdx.org.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 FM on your radio dial in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO FM. Today is Monday, the 4th of August. It is approximately 8:01 a.m., and I am Cecil. I shall serve as your host for this program, and thank you for taking some time, your valuable time, to spend with this community. I remind you that we are living in perilous times, but aren't all times perilous. Nevertheless, for us, this is where we are, and these are the times we are living in. So where are we, and where do we want to go? Those are some of the things that we continue to face daily. And as this authoritarian regime continue to wield its power and continue to attempt to make people and institutions submit to the authoritarian reign, sometimes we may feel discouraged, or sometimes we may feel encouraged by the actions we see all around us, discouraged by the actions of a government which has laid bare its intentions to create a society that many people do not want or desire, an oppressive society which rewards the few while punishes the many. Those are things that we are faced with, but we are also encouraged, I think, by ways in which people continue to resist and find ways to eventually take down, to abolish, to reestablish a society where all people's needs are valued and where the concerns for the other has priority over concern for self. But those are long-term goals and require actions. It also requires dedication of not only a few, but many. And in these times when so much seems to be overwhelming us, it is important, I think, for us to acknowledge those times when people are able to stand up and do great things. Well, what are some of those examples of people standing up and doing great things? This is a time for you to share in your community, in your town, in your household. What are steps that people are doing to resist this authoritarian regime, which continue to use a heavy force of vindictiveness, of power, of might, to overwhelm, to push down, I was going to say peoples, but indeed all creation's desire for freedom, for the ability to be, quite frankly, to breathe. And so what are some of those examples of people standing up and doing great things? Let me read you a statement from the mayor of Portland. And I want to contrast the response of some officials and also get your opinions on what are ways in which we can resist. Late last week, the mayor of Portland issued an executive order which reads, whereas the city of Portland believes in and is committed to the rule of law and the protection of all persons of persons' civil rights, and whereas federal non-discrimination laws like the Civil Rights Act of 1964 remains fundamental to ensuring all Portlanders can continue to access city programs and services free from discrimination based on their protected class status, and whereas recent statements and actions by the Trump administration has created uncertainty in respect to the ability of many states and local government to access funding appropriate by Congress by attempting to make such funding contingent upon certain certification, and whereas the city is a part to the litigation in San Francisco et al. V. Trump and King County et al. V. Turner et al. That challenges the Trump administration overstepping its immigration enforcement and its attempt to interfere with the city's legal diversity, equity, and inclusion work. Whereas the city of Portland has been remained committed to complying with federal non-discrimination laws, therefore, pursuant to my authority under the Portland City Charter, City Code, and any applicable law, I hereby order as follow. 1. Compliance with federal law. Notwithstanding any conflict in provision of city code, city ordinance, city resolution, or bureau policy, notwithstanding any contrary city or bureau practice, city's employees, programs, and services are required and directed to comply with all applicable federal civil rights and non-discrimination laws, including but not limited to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. By complying with these laws, city programs and services will provide services, programs, and benefits without regards or preference based on protected class status consistent with our ongoing commitment to complying with federal non-discrimination actions. 2, actions require the city administration or their designee will work with city bureaus and officers to review programs and services for ongoing and continued compliance with this executive order. including without limitation, undertaking disparity studies as appropriate to identify historical discriminatory actions taken by the city that continues to need remedy and repair, signed on the 31st day of July 2025, Keith Wilson, Mayor of the City of Portland. Huh. Well, what is that? Well, that's a lot of talk, a lot of words, and a lot of effort to say, blah, 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 we don't agree, but we have to. Because, as the mayor explained, that, you know, if the city does not comply with the president attack upon DEI, that we would be in serious problems of losing funding to the city's $349 million in active federal grants that are at risk, the mayor says. And about 90% of these grants support the city of Portland transportation and housing programs. Well, let's one think that we are being too critical of the mayor, and the mayor should be criticized. I think it's important to realize that these are things that many municipalities, states, towns are wrestling with, how to comply with what we believe are immoral and certain illegal acts by the federal administration. So what should be the response? What should be the proper way to do it? Well, that was one mayor's response, and I want to share with you two mayor's responses. One is the, first I'll read with you a statement from the mayor of Seattle, Bruce Harrell, who said, and the mayor, Mayor Portland referenced a lawsuit with, but the mayor of Seattle said, the fight is on, and this is where we show who we are. The mayor of Seattle, offering some signs of resisting. The mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, also responded to, well, how should you respond to the Trump administration? We'll play a small clip of what he says.
Calling the president a terrorist?
No, what I'm saying is trying to hold people hostage and manipulating them to succumb to his will, that is how terrorists behave. We're not going to negotiate with terrorists.
What are your thoughts on having a meeting with the Trump administration to try and, for lack of a better phrase, kiss the ring to be able to not, to stop the federal funds from being held back from the city of Chicago?
Well, I will just say, you know, outside of a 2016, you know, Cubs World Series ring, I'm not kissing a ring, okay? The president of the United States of America has an open invitation to the fifth floor of the greatest freaking city in the world, the city of Chicago. And I'm gonna just be bold here for a second. There's a long history of black political leaders talking to people who may not see us as first class, trying to force your will to break the spirit of working people in order to have a conversation. That's terrorism. We're not gonna negotiate with terrorists. We're gonna negotiate on behalf of working people in this city. And that's what American people want us to do. There's a reason why he's losing support. Now, he doesn't care. This president refuses to see our humanity, and his response to this economy is to give tax breaks and benefits to the ultra rich while the rest of us are struggling. You got to show up for working people in this city, in this country, and not for the oligarchs and the ultra rich. That's what has destroyed our economy, is that we have the ultra rich who continue to receive tax breaks while the rest of us have to pay for their failures.
You're talking about terrorism. You're not calling the president a terrorist?
No, what I'm saying is trying to hold people hostage and manipulating them to succumb to his will and then hold up our tax dollars, that is how terrorists behave.
And that is the mayor of Chicago, who responded to the mayor Brandon Johnson responding to how to respond to the president. A couple of points before we open the lines for reflections from others. In his and those short remarks, the mayor of Chicago stated that there's a history of black political leaders addressing and talking and negotiating with, and I think the terms to use, who don't consider us first class. Certainly the history of oppressed people, and certainly in this society, has been one of resistance and of speaking strongly and taking actions that may be difficult, especially among those who do not require you as human. Interesting, the two mayors that I quoted as resistant, Brandon Johnson of Chicago is African American, and the mayor of Seattle, Bruce Harrell, is African Asian American. Those are just two mayors, two municipalities who are pushing back. And certainly I don't think there is one right response, but the contrast, those who are saying that we have to resist as much as we can, as opposed to others saying we can, but we have to only so far, no easy answers. But what are some of your thoughts in terms of ways in which people are resisting and who are, again, something that we spoke about last week and continue on, what are ways in which you think we should respond, and what are some of your thoughts? This is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our first caller, Santiago. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not really that surprised that Keith Wilson caved. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, there is a growing voice within the people, not just in Portland, but around the country, where they understand that not only is the system fundamentally broken, but it's actually functioning the way it's supposed to.
Right.
You know, and so many liberals and even like a lot of progressives are more interested in upholding order than demanding justice. And that's what this is about. Mm. You know, it's like, let's just throw people under the bus and just hope for the best at this point. And this is why so many people are talking about the need, not just for a third party, but I mean literally for the destruction of the system that we're under, because these politicians cannot fathom a world where politics aren't just this ideological binary that's just more of a thought experiment than something that actually hurts, that either benefits or harms people in reality.
Let me ask you, in terms of that point, in terms of, I think you put it, you know, there are some politicians who are more concerned, and I think these are your words, upholding order rather than to demand justice. How do we, you know, and those are, you know, we see like the Democratic, you know, stakeholders or major players who are, you know, saying, oh, yeah, this is how the game is played. This is, you know, we're following these rules. Is there a way in which to move those people out of those power systems or their influences? Or what's the response to people who you thought were your allies who are just caving in?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I know ultimately, like, as a communist, like, you can organize along certain principles, but it's understanding that liberals and even much of progressives are only dedicated to, they're dedicated to ideals. They're not dedicated to material changes. And So when it comes to this sort of thing, it's the problem with liberals is that they care about winning. Fundamental change for this country has not come from a place of winning. When you think about civil rights was highly unpopular. Queer and trans rights have been highly unpopular. Women's rights were highly unpopular. You know, indigenous people's rights were highly unpopular. They were fought against. There's bloodshed against them. So we have to stop. So if we want fundamental change, we've got to get away from these charlatans who only care about short-term victories. Oh. And that's what this is about. This is a short-term victory. Whatever the mayor thinks is going to keep things flowing, it's ultimately just drinking salt water to stay hydrated. There's no real principled stance.
I think you raise a point that needs to for people to reflect on, and I think how you put it, you know, these things that somehow we raise up and talk about, you know, women's rights or trans rights or civil rights, and you know, we have these days in which we remember these actions, and the point that you made that in during those times of struggles, even today, those were not popular actions. So if you are seeking, you're seeking popularity, well, you shouldn't be on that banner. And so maybe a lesson that I'm learning is that, you know, at some point you have to take a stand and say whether you want fundamental change or whether you just want to continue to prop up the system.
Well, and that's exactly what it is. I mean we look at the situation of our time, Palestine. It's very specifically settler colonial and apartheid. Calling out apartheid in South Africa was very unpopular because many companies benefit. And it's the same reason why trans rights, queer rights, black rights, brown rights, however you want to look at it, were always looked down upon, because capitalist countries need an underclass to subjugate and to exploit. And if you constantly raise people up to a status of equality, then all of a sudden the profits stop flowing because there's nobody you can exploit anymore. No. And that's what a lot of this stuff is about. They need a permanent underclass to exploit. They need to be able to find a way to make that happen. And that's what liberals don't understand, is you can't maintain the rich while lifting up the poor, because as long as the rich people have the money and have the power, they will always work to undermine the system. It took them 80 years from the rollout of FDR system, as a socially fascist as it was, since it really just benefited white people in the end for the most part. Right. But I mean, it took them, but even that wasn't enough. It took them 80 years to undermine it, and it's going to take them a lot less time to undermine it again if something else comes along. Sure. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to look at fundamental change. And I mean, I'm talking revolution, and now it doesn't have to be violent, but remember that the oppressor sets the watermark for how the oppressed resist.
Yeah,
those are things we have to look at.
I think you raised some excellent point this morning. I need to let you go, but I also want to emphasize one last point is your observation, is that it took them 80 years to begin to creatively dismantle the system of, you know, Social Security, FDR's liberal reforms. They're in it for the long term. And I think, you know, as I talk to people I know, or, you know, people you might characterize as liberal, who say, oh, yes, the midterms is coming, you know, as hoping as if the next election cycle is going to change things for the better. It's a long-term struggle requires strength and ability for long-distance runners. We have several callers online, so I need to let you go. But thank you so much for
sharing. So have a great day, brother.
You as well. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Our next caller will come in, and I'm sure Janet will have some thoughts on how to respond to fascism. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. It seems to me that this subject of reformation
is a personal thing on the macro level. It's not something that happens overnight. I was listening to Poppy talk about how it's coming along. It's going to take such a long time. And the young people, we find some alternative media, fortunately, that we can talk like we are this morning in the moment. We're talking about the pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. And the subject for me, having kind of delved a little bit into psychology, is the shadow side. And interestingly enough, if you're interested in various faiths and the idea that the jihad actually means rooting out the negativity in our own lives. And so in Buddhism, from my studies, it's like not a question of good and evil or one is here and one is there, but to recognize that the safety and the security of the land is the same as the purity of the mind of the people and the hearts of the people. So when we look on the possibility of people not just talking with their talking points and with their intellects, but there's actually a change of heart, which is hard to figure out. Well, the picture I have of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, to understand the changes within ourselves. So my friend recently published a book, because she's up in Alaska, about inner happiness is the path to world peace. So I think when people are able to recognize and look within and create relationships and having a type of what they call conscientization in liberation theology, that we can go really, really, really deep within, and then the shadow work that each of us really needs to do, if we're going to, like Jung calls, individuate or come to a sense or a solid foundation of happiness in our own lives, that we can really deal with family stuff and friend stuff and have ties and bonds where we're going forward and support each other to do this really, really difficult shadow work about what are our own weaknesses, crashing through our own self-imposed limitations, that we can even have this conversation, I think is good proof that we can be coherent enough to delve these subjects, because it confuses me so much that I try to say, oh, well, look at Hannah Arendt. And then I say, well, then I hear, well, she was going with Kierkegaard, and what was she really thinking? Right. So people have what they're saying publicly, and then we want to really speak truth. And people can, I think, in Buddhist, turning poison to medicine, that we can express ourselves truly and clearly with a foundation and a moral place where I can think that the legacy of my family would be that, you know, that I didn't like cower at this point, but to discuss this thing, not to just kind of shoot from the hip. It's too serious for that.
Right. Yes.
Impulse. Because I remember Charlie Chaplin was talking about blind impulse is the atavistic impulse that it's going to bring us down. So it's good that we're talking about this. Very complicated. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And you know, I appreciate your willingness to examine this and to talk about the importance of this work and the shadow work, as you mentioned. Thank you so much, Janet. You are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We've had a couple of callers share on terms of how they are responding, how they are resisting, what are the ways in which we should do it. Began this program by contrasting the responses of the mayor of Portland with the mayors of Seattle and Chicago, and whether or not you should kiss Donald Trump's ring. And the mayor of Chicago said, well, the only ring he will probably kiss is one with a 2016 Cubs World Series ring. But Donald Trump, no. Okay, so let's go to our next caller, Francis, who's been waiting. Francis, how are you this morning?
Hi, nice to hear you. Where have you been?
Well, I have been where you have not been, but I'm glad we're both here right now.
All right. I just assumed you're on vacation.
Yeah, I did.
But anyway, it's nice to hear your voice. There's a whole bunch on my mind about all this, but my daughter sent me a video, Janelle Monáe's cut called Turntable.
Mm.
And it was meant to uplift me, you know, because, and it really did.
Okay.
So I recommend people checking it out, Janelle Monáe. And it's kind of a rap type cut, but rap now has developed into so much more than that.
Right.
The music is really good also. But it's about believing in the truth. You know, and I don't want to play their game. People keep saying, now we've got to play like they play. No, we do not. You know, it's the tables are going to turn. Just check this song out. In the words of one of my heroes, Adam Graham Powell,
he
says, keep the faith, baby.
Keep the faith, baby,
And you got to keep going forward with it. The song is kind of cool because it talks about how the whole world is standing up to you, to the oppressor, not just the oppressed. And it's very good. But I wanted to... did you finish that book about Frederick Douglass?
Okay. No.
No, me either.
Oh, okay.
I'm just now getting into it. I said I was going to do it this summer, and it's already August.
So right. Summer, oh no. Maybe by next summer, but
I was going to say, in the beginning of that song, it talks about there's a narrative of someone talking, and they say that they're talking about despair, and they're talking about how one is not allowed to despair.
Right.
We cannot despair. And back to the mayor's statement, I had not heard about this at all until you read that this morning, and just listening to it without any other voices, to me, but I kind of think this way, so I don't know if it's true or not, but he was saying to follow the law, and all the law that he referred to was the Civil Rights Act.
Yes.
And that, to me, the message was just keep on doing your diversity, equity, and inclusion, because that's the law.
Okay.
Whatever this order that's coming through, it's nobody's law. It's violating our law.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you for putting in that perspective, because what it reminds me, you know, when you share that, is that, you know, this is a long struggle, and there is no, like, proper response which is right for all times. We just have to figure out as we go along. And as you said, we have to not despair. We have to continue on. So, yes.
Even though many times throughout a day I think about the people in Gaza and just having a drink of water and realizing that they can't even do that.
Right.
It's like, what in the world are we allowing to happen?
Yeah. And we're responsible for this.
Whose money is this, really? What is this? There's not enough money in the world.
All right. Well, there is it.
Hopefully, it will. The message is coming through, but it's taken so darn long. Shoot.
It is.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, I got to go.
Okay.
Well, have a good day.
Thank you so much, Frances. Thank you for your thoughts and reminding us of the work we have to do. I thought of, as you share your thoughts this morning, I was reminded of a quote from Elie Wiesel I came across, and he wrote, you know, the Holocaust survivor, he wrote, I swore never to be silent whenever and wherever human beings endure suffering and humiliation. We must always take sides, Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. Let's vow not to be silent. You're listening to More Talk Radio and your community radio station. I'm Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's hear some words from our next guest, Sharon. Good morning, Sharon.
Hi, thank you. I actually, what you just quoted is perfect segue, I guess, to what I want to say, which is just call the office of the mayor and speak out. I mean, it's not hard to call. He, you know, whether I do think another political system would be hopefully emerged, but in the meantime, this is the one we have. So, you know, make a call. Don't speak what you think. We don't take sides and be vocal. So at least call the mayor's office and say what you think of his capitulation, you know, and everywhere else you go. Speak up.
Speak up.
So, well, that's it. That's all I really want to say.
Well, that's a good point. I just want to ask you, because it seems so simple, and yet you said, you know, you can make a call. You have a voice. How do you respond to people who said, well, you know, I can call the mayor's office, but that doesn't do any good. How do you respond?
You know, I hear people say that, and I often, well, first off, I don't think that's true. I think it does make a choice, because they do care about the votes. You know, they're playing a political game, so they're truly just trying to be reelected, a lot of them. So they do care. So it does matter. It doesn't maybe, you know, be hard to see, but I have been part of groups that are on phone banking, and you can see it. The other thing is, literally, it takes less time than to put cream in your coffee. You know, so it's like, why not?
Why not? Yes. Why not?
Your dog, or, you know, whoever you live with, that probably doesn't want to hear you complain anymore. Do it to someone where it might actually matter.
I'd like that. You know, my pet is probably really upset with me now. So why don't I just complain to someone who's paid to listen?
Right, and someone who might be able to do something with it.
Right.
You know, a lot of times, from what I understand of how it works, they literally keep like a, you know, at their office, keeps like a log of, you know, different issues and how many, they don't, you know, write your name and everything, but you will have to give your zip code, just, you know, show that you're a constituent.
Right.
But they literally just will have, you know, like 10 issues and like how many yay, how many no, you know, kind of thing, you know. And then they give this information to the elected official. And they know, like, where their constituents are, what they're feeling, you know, what matters to them.
Uh-huh.
They don't know. Well, this is one way.
Uh-huh.
And that's the most direct way for people who are elected officials to know what their constituents are actually thinking. You know, if you guess, you know, figure out, you know, they have numbers to go with it, too. And so,
yes.
It matters, like I say, much more than what my cat, who's sitting on my lap right now, could actually do about anything.
And it does matter. And thank you for just reminding us. And, you know, I know we all have, you know, difficult, complicated lives. But as you reminded us, Sharon, that perhaps, you know, we might have, half a minute to pick up
and make a call. That's like all it takes, really. So hopefully we have that much time.
Okay.
Thanks so much, and thank you for your show.
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you for your encouraging us to take action. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And I would like to affirm what our last caller, Sharon, just said in terms of taking action. In terms of, we all have issues. We all are concerned. We see something on our screen, we read something in the newspaper, we hear something in our workplace, and it causes us but we all are able to take action. And as Sharon said, those actions might seem simple, but it makes a difference. And all of us, each person is called to do what they are able to do. And amazingly, you are called to do that. Only you can do that. Only you can share your voice, and it makes a difference. Pick up the phone, drop the, you know, send the email, respond to an appeal. There are many things that we are called to do and that we can change. And it makes a difference. It certainly makes a difference. We've heard from various callers this morning offering their perspectives. There are things that we can do to make a change. What about you? What are things that encourages you in respond to? We began this morning with three mayors' responses to the threat of the Trump administration. And as our last caller or a couple of callers observe, you know, there's no response that is the correct response, but a response is necessary. So what do you recommend as a response? Let's go to our next caller. Oh, and we're fortunate that Janet is back because she has something they forgot to add. Good morning, Janet.
Well, I just wanted to bring up the point that it's not what we say, but it's what we do. And unfortunately, how wonderful everybody like holds aloft Elie Wiesel. He actually managed at the end to be thinking this is a good rationale for doing settlements.
No.
And so I think to embrace the deeper aspects, the profounder aspects, is the important things that we're all human beings, that we don't sit on victimhood and then make a ploy for our side deserves to whatever. Mm-hmm. So to get beyond the victim persecutor things, to recognize, well, how that switches around and baits us and all that kind of thing is not really the end point that we're going to hold ourselves aloft, but what we do in the moment and how we really reframe this thing for the good of all is the humanitarian reformation that we really need. I just want to say that briefly. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling and sharing that point. I think it is correct and to recognize, well, one thing is that we all are human, and no one of us will live a life, you know, morally perfect. No one of us will have the correct analysis or the correct response. But what we can do, I think all of us is called to, is to follow our hearts and to know what is true and what is right. Recently, a theologian who I admired died, Walter Brueggemann. And one of the things he said, he wrote a lot about the prophets and the role of the prophets. And one of the things he said is, like the ancient prophets, we are dispatched back to the good work entrusted to us. It is the work of peacemaking. It is the work of truth-telling. It is the work of justice-doing. It is good work, but it requires our resolve to stay it. Even in the face of the forces to the contrary that are sure to prevail for a season. Let's do the work of the prophets. Let's go to our next caller. Tangent has been waiting. Good morning, top, Tangent.
Top of the morning to you all, to y'all. Well, I'm going to start something new. The media word of the week. And I noticed this every time I heard about this $5 or $9 million that was grabbed back from Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So that was a number of times last week and this morning. whatever $1 million, Claude. And I wonder why they use, and it's always the same word. It's not, you know, reneged or grabbed back, you know. But the thing is you think, well, it's just a term. It helps to, you know, tell. But what it is, here's the thing. A lot of people think that we're better than animals and animals are dumb, you know, and stuff. But then we use all these terms that only animals have claws. We have fingernails. So get what I'm saying?
Yes.
They fight tooth and nail.
Yes.
You know. Yeah. And this is not about, they're not talking about a real fight. They're talking about something going on Capitol Hill. So right here is just some more fun with Trump. So he likes to talk about the worst of the worst. Well, he's the worst of the worst president. Gosh, there's a few more I forgot, but somebody mentioned something about Trump's humanity or something, and I mean, this guy would go like, humanity, you know? What's the humanity? That's not worth anything to me, you know? I'm here for the money.
Yeah, well, unfortunate, yeah. Well, and the point is, I think, is that regardless of how we feel about the person who's sitting in the Oval Office at this time, that their action impact millions and millions of people. And as someone observed earlier, children are continuing to starve in Gaza because of the actions that we're responsible for. And so regardless, as you reminded us, of who's there, there are things that we can do and make a difference. Thank you so much for calling and for your thoughts this morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO. We've had numerous callers. Our last caller shared some of his thoughts. So what are your thoughts in terms of responding to the president's and the president's action? I began this program by stating three mayors' responses to the president and whether or not they are willing to bow down before him and kiss the ring. Those are things that we have to ask ourselves. And as, you know, a couple of callers reminded us earlier, there is no proper correct response, which is correct for all times in all places. So how do we respond? It's in many ways. I confess that at some times I feel unable to respond or seem overwhelmed at times. But as a caller, and I think it was our caller Sharon, reminded us, is that each one of us, we can do something. And certainly, as Sharon reminded us, we can complain all day long with our cat, you know, on our lap and our teacup on the table beside us as we scream at the monitor in front of us, or we can take some action, which may require 2 minutes to call or to write an email or to write a postcard. There are simple things that we can do to make a difference. It may require taking action by, you know, actually going to a meeting either virtually or physically. The Congress right now is on their August break. Congressional representatives are having town hall meetings in their districts. Have you attended a congressional town hall meeting? There are things that you can do by attending them. They're held sometimes during the day, sometimes in the evening, in community rooms, public spaces, and opportunities for you to make a difference. So if it's the congressional representative, go and chat. Maybe someone who may be your local representative on the county you live in. You can make a difference with them. It may be a representative on in the state legislators, like state legislative legislature. You can make a difference. There are things that we all can do, and I am reminded of a friend of mine who made it almost like a spiritual practice. You know, in the morning, we all have practices, or during the day, we all have practices, whether it's a practice that's, you know, going and having that cup of your favorite beverage in the morning, or maybe, you know, picking up your phone or newspaper and looking at what's there. It may be, you know, a practice of reading a book or listening to a favorite podcast. Well, these are all practices that can make a difference. And as such, one of the practices you might add is, what are things I can do to make a difference? And it might be something simple. So one thing you might do is, this month, what are things that I will do to make a difference, to bring joy, to bring hope, to work for a world that we want our children to live in? And as a caller reminded us earlier, it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a long time to get there. And as the caller reminded us, that the effort to dismantle the social network that was established, you know, 90, 80 years ago, it was a long-term effort. And I'm thankful for the caller who reminded us, you know, that was 90, 80 years ago. It's a long-term effort. Many of us who are think of the organizing on the political right, like in the 50s and the 60s, which began resisting civil rights movements, resisting integration, resisting public school integration, and then you had the movement for private schools, and then you know go several decades later and you see school vouchers, and certainly you saw in the spring the culmination with the effort to dismantle the Department of Education. Certainly these things are long-term efforts, and I may be surprised at what has happened in the last 6 months. But as the caller reminded us, that these are things that are certainly planned, that that requires time and work. And has it been effective on a side for a particular political perspective? It can, and it will be for those who offer an alternative. And we know this. We know this. As the mayor of Chicago mentioned in the remark that we shared earlier, we are familiar with, quote, negotiating with those who do not think you are a full citizen. Those who are oppressed, who have lived through oppression, know what it requires. Requires community. It requires a great deal of love. And as a person who called earlier reminded us, it requires us not to create the same type of system that we live in today. So let us not lead with resentment or hatred. But what does it mean to live fundamentally, to approach these things from an attitude of love, and an attitude, a vision of a world where all are invited in and all are welcome? This is the beginning of August. August 1st was a day of celebration for many countries who were formerly part of the British Empire. Well, why is August 1st a day of celebration for many countries that were formerly a part of the empire? Well, on August 1st, 1833, the English Parliament passed the Slavery Abolition Act of 1833. After many years of struggle, that act was passed, came into effect on August 1st, 1834. And so many countries that were formerly part of the British Empire celebrate August 1st as Emancipation Day. So whether you're from Belize or St. Lucia or St. Vincent and the Grenadines or Barbados or Jamaica or Bermuda or Turks and Caicos, Trinidad and Tobago or Guyana, you all celebrate August 1st as a Liberation Day, Emancipation Day. And that requires a lot of work, and it reminds us that we honor the strength and resilience, and as people shared with us earlier, the unbreakable spirit of those who fought for freedom and justice. The abolition of slavery across the Caribbean is a powerful reminder of the enduring legacy of people, of the importance of preserving our rich cultural heritage and the ability to resist. So let's continue to resist. Whether you are in Grant County, whether you are in Portland, whether you are in your workplace right now, there are things you can do, and there are things that we can continue to do to remind ourselves. So let us continue the struggle. And on this, well, it was a few days after Emancipation Day, but as we celebrate, let's remind ourselves of people who have struggled before, the lessons that we can learn from them, and where we can go into the future. Hear again these words from Walter Brueggemann, because we are reminded that we are called to be people who continue to struggle. Walter Brueggemann reminds us, like the ancient prophets, we are dispatched back to the good works entrusted to us. It is the work of peacemaking. It is the work of truth telling. It is the work of justice doing. It is good work, but it requires our resolve to stay it, even in the face of the forces to the contrary that are sure to prevail for a season. These forces may prevail for a season, but we know another story, and we are encouraged by a different understanding of what the world is and what the world may be. And so, my dear siblings, be encouraged. Do not give up hope. Let us remind ourselves of the strength we gain from one another, the strength we gain from those who went before us, and the strength we gain by working for a world for those who will follow us. It is hard work, but it is good work, and it is work that we are required to do. My friends, as this administration continues its effort to clamp down on resistance, to clamp down on voices, I hope you will continue to support independent voices such as this community radio station, KBOO. When so many voices are being silenced, it is so important for you to continue to support independent media such as KBOO. So here's one thing you can do. Go to our website, click on Donate Now, and in 30 seconds, you can make a difference. Continue to do that. Continue to make a difference. Continue to build a better world. You've been listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. Take care of yourself and the community around you. And I will speak with you next time.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kbu.fm.
On the next episode of NeuroEmergent, I talk with Leah Blankenship, founder of the Neurodiversity Alliance at the University of Oregon.